thank you for bearing with the machine gun approach. Of course, that's not what I'd do on a Sunday, slow down, and I think we can slow down a bit more now. But I want to, I've been asked to speak more specifically about training, and so I want to sort of focus on a few things and give plenty of time for questions. I love questions, and one of the things I try and do in a training context is to be provocative. It's interesting, I don't think people learn from measured presentations. So I think you need to overstate things to provoke thinking. I'm not certain there's anything in the Bible that says that, but I'm fairly sure it doesn't. Although you listen to that, anyway, I'll try and give you justifications. But in my teaching and training of leaders, I want to say provocative things in order to help people to think. If everything's always so qualified that you're not really saying anything to make anybody think, I think it's boring. But I may be wrong, but that's my own. So, developing leaders. Let me say a few things. The reason for asking someone like me is not because I'm not a great theoretician. Others could write books on these things, but we've done a lot of the things that I'm talking about. And so I'm sure you want examples and best practice. One of the things I'm encouraging those of us on the National Gospel Partnerships group to think about is that the purpose of partnerships, the fundamental need of a gospel partnership, a regional gospel partnership, is to share best practice. And I think there's a little bit of a conspiracy of silence on this. That is to say, those of us that are Reformed evangelicals love God's word, absolutely rightly. We concentrate our expository groups and our expository principles, and we're happy to keep celebrating those things. But there's almost a kind of silver bullet thing. If you just teach the Bible carefully, expound the Bible accurately, the rest will follow, because that's what happened for Dick Lucas back in the 1970s. It isn't what happened. A, Dick Lucas was a unique person, London's a unique place, and there are a whole lot of other people who are working furiously around him to build platforms for his Bible teaching. I just think there are dangerous conspiracies here that are saying, you know, we just teach the Bible. No, we don't. Nobody just teaches the Bible. There's lots of other things going on in ministry, and some of them are not great and some of them are better, and we need to talk about them, to reform them under God's word and to share best practice. So Bible teaching is absolutely central. Our expository preaching principles must remain the heart of all that we do. If we don't address the other things we have to do, I think what happens is people start wandering off to the networks and spend all their time talking about best practice and never talk about how to expand the scriptures. So that's a personal view, but it is an increasingly strongly held view that one of the things we can best do at a gospel partnership is to share best practice, things that work in this region. I don't know this region so well, so you can ignore most of what I say, but I'm going to share some of the things that we do. Our little strapline as a church is simply that we witness to make disciples. And the image that we're using a lot at the moment is that we're not a cruise ship. Still going? Not a cruise ship. That is, we're not just a church full of passengers dedicated to our own comfort. We're a lifeboat full of crew dedicated to saving the lost. And that is a powerful image that we're playing through everything that we do in church at the moment. And the word witness for us is significant because it stands for our seven prayerful ministries that we're running across the church. Worship, instruct, train, network, evangelize, serve, and support. If those of you who know anything about purposeful ministries and the five M's and all that kind of stuff that came from purpose-driven church and so on, it's the same. It's five are the same. So five of witness are the same. And then the M for mission is divided into evangelize, that's our local community, network, that's church planting across London, and support, which is international partnerships, which are so much part of our DNA, I couldn't bear to put them all under one M. So we've divided them up into three. That's just our church. They're familiar things. We could talk much more about that. And therefore, one of those ministries is now train. The train ministry leader in our church is Matt Beebe, who's my senior associate, extremely able, a godly and lovely man. He trained as a management consultant, and there is so much I'm having to learn from him about best practice and about organising processes and structures and all the rest of it. He's brilliant at those things. I'm not. I had to learn a lot from him. And one of the things, for those of us who are more senior, and so sometimes I think if we can stand the pain, learning what we're not good at and understanding what we can't do well is one of the key factors to growth. Rather than pretending I can do everything and anybody who does things different must go, is just a... Sorry, we'll talk about that another time. Anyway, train. Here are some things we've been doing over the years, but Matt is now responsible for all these things. He could give you mega diagrams and so on. Firstly, then, church leadership development. Ephesians 4:11, you know, says to equip the saints for the work of ministry for building up the body. In other words, you know that the risen Christ has given Bible teachers, the apostles and prophets, evangelists and pastors and teachers, to equip the saints for the work of ministry for building up the body. Now, an image that we use for this is that lots of people think of church as a football stadium or a football match in this way. The crowds gather on a Sunday to watch the very expensive footballers on the pitch, to watch the very expensive clergy play the game. And then the crowds that have gathered then go home. They're either booing or applauding all the way through the sermon. They go home discussing how the match went. So lots of people's concepts of church is that the crowds gathering on a Sunday are the congregation. And the players on the pitch are the clergy. And we may even think like that. And so all our emphasis is upon finding the money to pay for more staff, building up staff teams and so on. And we just bought into the idea that the players are the staff. Now, that is not how the Bible sees church. And now you know that, but I want to endorse that. To say, no, the players on the pitch are the whole congregation. So, in other words... Let me say a bit more. When Jesus said, I will build my church, Paul explained how I commit you to God and the word of his grace, which can build you up, Matthew 16, Acts 20. Paul explains further that Bible teachers are given to teach. So many people think of the crowd of spectators, the congregation gathering to watch Bible expensive professional footballers, the clergy playing the game, doing clerical ministry. But Paul says... Bible teachers are given to prepare God's people for works of service and ministry, i.e. it's the ministry of all God's people that builds up churches. To continue the football analogy, the teams of players are not just the clergy, but all the people in their ministry teams, led by their captains, the elders who lead by example, trained by their player coaches, Bible teachers such as preachers and small group leaders, with the coaching manual, which is the Bible, to play the game of loving God, loving each other, loving our neighbour, against the opposition of sin, the world, and the devil, before the watching crowds or our unbelieving family, friends, colleagues, and community. So in other words, our ministry teams are massive. We have several hundred people on our ministry team. Now, I'd love to say more about how to action that. So our train ministry is dedicated to training our committed, that is those in our church. All are being encouraged and enabled. And the three words we're using are recruited, equipped, and deployed. How do we train the congregation for their ministries? Firstly, through sermons. So in my preaching, and Matt's preaching, and Andrew Nichols' preaching, we're consciously trying to train the congregation for their ministries at church and, of course, throughout the week as well. We try and do it one-to-one. So we're obviously wanting to have a cascade of one-to-one reading the Bible, people constantly reading the Bible with others. And a lot of the work of the staff is to put people into one-to-one relationships and in groups. So there are endless numbers of small groups where people are being discipled and equipped for their ministry. One of the great joys to me at the moment is that Matt himself initiated something called Reliable Men, which is just using a ministry from the Good Book Company. So when I go off to Westminster on a Tuesday morning, for example, I walk past Starbucks, and there is Matt with 10 guys reading the Bible in Starbucks before they got on the trains at 7 o'clock in the morning. Now, what he's done is he's trained the guys to do that, and now many of them are now running their own groups across the congregation, so there are endless now Reliable Men groups and people reading one-to-one. And he is just constantly driving through Reliable Men groups and one-to-one Bible reading. A lot of our evangelism is done that way. We find a lot of people don't want to go on courses anymore. So we have something which I set up a long time ago called Beer and Bibles. We provide the Bibles, you bring your own beer, whatever beer or whatever you like. because people want to have a conversation. So the whole thing is join the conversation. So it's not a course of 6 weeks which we're going to do this curriculum. We also do Christian Explore. We also do Faith in the I World, which is apologetics and stuff. But it's interesting for lots of guys. It's just beer and bottles. Come have a chat. So we're not going to manipulate you. We're not a cult. We're not going to indoctrinate you. Just come have a chat. You bring the beer you like. We'll provide the bottles. Any questions on the table. Because a lot of guys are a long way back, and they don't want to do a course. I want to ask the question, for what kind of ministry are we training people? Now, let me just, again, be a bit provocative for a moment. A lot of the ministry, the patterns of ministry that we've learned have come from wonderful university churches. And lots of the pastors that we've admired over the years have been the pastors in large city centre university churches. If you just think for a moment about what that means. What that means is hundreds of extremely able, educated young people are arriving at those churches every year. You don't have to evangelise the city to get those young people. They're arriving in large numbers. And what will you then train them to do in your university city church? What we have done is that very gifted pastors, men who we've all loved and admired, have trained those students how to read the Bible and how to lead small groups as a prelude to becoming pastors and teachers themselves. In other words, raising up hundreds of pastor teachers of the future. That's absolutely right to do for a university. You know, if you're in Oxford and you've got 350 people, students arriving, 100 arrive every year and 100 leave every year, what are you going to do? I mean, you don't have to go out to Oxford and furiously evangelise the world trying to reach people. I know they do. Vaughan's doing a great job there. But you've got all these young leaders arriving, so you train them. And you train them to be little versions of what you are. You train them to be little pastors. And then, of course, we set up 938 to try and hang on to them. Okay, but what happens if you're in a town where there isn't a university? You haven't got hundreds of young people coming in. And you've got all these people in front of you who don't have Rolls-Royce brains and fantastic educations. One of the mistakes I think we made was that, partly from the church planting ministry thing, I just kept training everybody to be little versions of me. I trained all the elders to be little pastors. So they all had small groups, and they tried to pastor their small group like a tiny church. I then multiplied congregations in the building and appointed congregational pastors to do the same thing. The problem was I couldn't fit them all in the preaching program because we're all preachers. But no one's making any films. No one's organising the welcoming. Nobody knows anything about IT. And all kinds of things are not happening. And I look across at the charismatic churches who don't spend much time preparing their sermons, but I know everything about making films, and their churches are huge. And I'm thinking, what do we do? So I kind of gave way and thought, well, maybe we just need to multiply lots of small churches because that's the only thing I know how to do. The reason being, all I know how to do is to train pastors. And so I'd have elders who are pastors, congregational pastors, and then this massive gap with growing hundreds of people who have been Christians for 10 years who are managing departments, managing large budgets at work with nothing to do except creche, sound system and coffee. So there's this huge gap. And I'm kept looking for apprentices. I plunder the congregation for apprentices because they're little me's. And I know how to train them and how to do word ministry. What about the hundreds of people, thoroughly capable guys, some of them middle-aged, who are not going to be pastor teachers? Well, there's creche, coffee or the sound desk. Now, this is... I don't want to get too much into this now because there's so much else to talk about, but we have actually gone through a transition. One of the mistakes I made was I started employing diversity at the staff team level. I brought on a theologian and an evangelist, a great theologian, a great evangelist, lovely men, but they weren't trainers. So no one else got trained. So I had diversity in the staff team. I had a great evangelist to put up. I had a great theologian to put up, but it didn't mean that anything was happening on the ground. And I realised that was a false call. And what I needed to do was to employ staff who would address training, variety and diversity on the ground. And the 5 M's, or the, you know, frankly, we dismissed the 5 M's in Purposeful Church because we're racist about Americans. Anything written by America, we thought we don't need to listen to. They just run big businesses. Like we have nothing to learn from them. That is arrogance in us. Maybe you love America. Maybe you read everything. I didn't. Because it was, oh, we don't need to learn from the Americans. You know, we run little churches, they run big churches, and we're better than them. That's how it went. I mean, that was the narrative I was growing up with. And then, of course, Andrew Heard came over from Australia, who's trained with the Sydney Anglicans. And he's learned a whole lot from that. His church has gone from nothing to 4,000, 3,500 in the same time I've been at Dundonald. And I have nothing to learn from him. I do have something. I flew there with my senior associate and one of our elders paid for it. I went to go and see what they're doing. And I'm thoroughly convinced. Because what we've done is we've divided up a generalist ministry into seven strands, things that we're all doing. And what we've done is we're starting to recruit everybody in the congregations into teams that are focused in one of those seven ministries by gifting, aptitude, and experience. So we've got all our congregations to fill in questionnaires. So there were 350 completed questionnaires offering gifts of ministry. We had 3,500 new offers of ministry. And over the recent months now, we've been recruiting all the congregations into teams. I'm just trying to say, what is this about? It's about lowering the bar. So that there's ministry for everybody. And it's about recruiting everyone in the congregation into ministry. So, for example, the serve team that are responsible for people arriving at church. So responsible for welcome teams, for database handling, finding out addresses, making contacts with people, putting people into contact groups, getting people into the right small groups. All this stickiness about church. Because people kept arriving and then they wouldn't come back. And we didn't know who they were, where they'd gone, or why they didn't come back. And maybe that doesn't happen for you. I realise London's a bit more sort of volatile, but that was happening to us. So if you're on the serve team, for example, you're in the serve team at our 9 o'clock congregation, or our 10:45 congregation, or our 1 o'clock Korean congregation that's not so much involved, but 4 o'clock family congregation, 7 o'clock evening congregation. You're in a serve team in all of those. You've got a team of, let's say, 10 in each congregation. So a team of 40 people dedicated to welcoming people into our church. They can't preach sermons. They don't know how to lead Bible studies, but do we need them? Absolutely we need them. And I say so much about it. We've been transitioning. It's been a huge transition. But it is about thinking about lowering the bar to stop just looking for the people who can be little pastors and realise there's all sorts of other ministries that you need to grow a church. So, I mean, as an example of it, it's fantastic, is that before Christmas I came in and I don't do anything on a Sunday other than preach try and talk to people. There was a film showing and it was Making the Most of Christmas. So I sat next to Matt. I said to Matt, who made this film? He said, I don't know. It was brilliant. And I said to him, so I'm the senior pastor, you're the senior associate pastor, and neither of us knows who even made this film. He said, no, we don't. I said, something's working well now, isn't it? The point was the evangelized team had decided we needed a film on Making the Most of Christmas. So they made it and they showed it and it happened. Now, there are all sorts of other things. You know, we've got people jumping up now doing stuff. I think, no, that needs to, you know. So there's a challenge to expertise. But suddenly all the congregations are excited because now they're all involved. They're all being asked to be part of teams. So as a congregational thing, I want to recommend to you thinking about this purpose-driven, not purpose-driven church so much. It is purpose-driven church, but you won't like it because it's American. Because you're racist, like I am. But it has a lot to teach us. That is to drive seven ministries across all the congregations. We also have congregational pastors, so there's a matrix. But don't just plant congregations that therefore you just basically duplicate the thing we're good at, which is preparing sermons and small Bible studies. And so you've got employing all these people doing all this the same thing, and no one's employed who can actually create brilliant music, films and the stuff that update your church and make you more accessible to people in the community you're trying to reach. That's the discussion. And suddenly all these people arrive. Yeah, now I used to make films. That's about recruiting people. Secondly, leadership training. For the last 20 years at this church and the 5 years before that, the only evening course I run, I used to occasionally do an evangelism course, called Down to Earth. I did do that for a while. But the only course that I do all the time is something called Prepare to Serve. It's on a Tuesday night. When I arrived at Dundonald, I was in my garden shed for 8 years. So we didn't have a building. The diocese gave us nothing. So we didn't have a house, a building, nothing. So we did everything in my kitchen or in my garden shed. I worked there. And PTS was basically, first I arrived, invited the elders and the Sunday school leaders and then their wives. And we just crammed 25 people into my kitchen, just crammed. And essentially what it is that for 1 year, from 8 for 8:15, so you know, when you have a small kitchen, until 10 o'clock, I would vomit over them everything I know about gospel ministry. That's essentially what it is. I'm not there to care for anybody. I tell them at the beginning. I'm not here to care for you. If you need caring, be in a small group. This is to download and go fast. And I basically teach as much as I can about gospel ministry in a year. And so because I'm on sabbatical on Monday, we had a last one last night and a barbecue. People love it. What is it now? Basically, I want to encourage you can do this because you just put in anything that you've developed on gospel ministry. So if you've done some talks on 2 Timothy, okay, that's your first element. Ever done a Bible overview? That's your second element. Ever done anything on how to give a talk? That's your third element. Don't know the rest? Right, get them to give talks. Just do whatever you've got and gradually build up your portfolio until you've got a coherent course. Now what I tend to do is something on the gospel the first night, gospel ministry the second night, gospel training the third night. We do 3 evenings, by the way, and then the monthly prayer meeting alternates with those. So I do it on a Tuesday evening and then except in the week when we have the prayer meeting, everybody gets together. And incidentally, adding music to the prayer meeting doubled the numbers. What do I do? Gospel, gospel ministry, gospel history, or gospel training. Then we have a gap. A series of 3 on understanding the teach of the Bible, gap. A series on a Bible overview, have a gap. Then I'll do predestination, sin, justification by faith, the cross, justification by faith, what's wrong with Roman Catholicism, often with justification by faith. Then we'll do the doctrine of the Spirit, we'll do ministry, church planting, church leadership, church, godliness, prayer. So, you know, can you do that? Of course you can do that. Okay, but the point is, 25 people, and by all means make it 5 to start with. When it started out, you know, not everybody is there, but the 25 people have got access to the senior pastor. I bring them into my home. We've had it in the building recently. We've just decided we're going to take it back into my home and have a smaller group. Because they meet my wife. They see me in the family. They see how I've let the family down. They see how the kids are fed up. Because in other words, they don't put me on a pedestal. They see what I'm really like. They see what ministry is like. When they arrive early, so the early guys would fit in. We'd read the Bible around the kids when they're small. And they'd never seen a home before where you read the Bible with the kids. So they don't know how to do it. So you just join in, sit here while we just read the Bible. And it's chaos, and they see what it means to be doing ministry, and they become part of your life. But in this course then, basically what I'm doing is explaining our theology and what that then means for church life. And what I'm really trying to do in that course is, I am telling stories all the time about the history of our church, telling of the sacrifices that people have made. Every time I talk about the elders, my eyes well up. I don't cry, you understand. Didn't you love Ranieri when he said that? So I didn't cry, my eyes just went wet. I love that. That is a proper man. And he's Italian too, so I love him. But I tell the stories. How much should people give? How do people know what to give if you don't tell them? So I tell stories about how somebody gave 70 grand to this or 25 grand to that. I ask somebody, I tell the stories so they know, because they don't know if you don't tell them. So basically I'm unloading the pain of ministry. I'm telling them what I've been doing. I listen, anything big happened today, you get married, you have a baby today, anything else, otherwise I'm not interested. And I'm generating an atmosphere which we go fast, we're serious about the Bible, and you download. If you're somebody who is gentle, hurting, in need of support at the moment, don't do this course with me. I love people who are in that situation. I always have. And we provide groups and support for them. But this is a group to raise up leaders. Now, within the group, there'll be the guys I'm hoping will be apprentices. And every so often during that, I'll take one of them for a drink or whatever. They all know what's coming. Sometimes during the course, you know, I'll say, and there are some people here who should be thinking about an apprenticeship. And sometimes the group laughs, and everybody knows, he knows his number is up, whatever the word is. Right, which leads us on then to prepare to serve is what I do. Serving as overseers is for elders. So you just take three or four passages and stick them together. That's a serving as overseers course, get your elders together. If they're elders, if you get their wives along as well, of course, often the women are far ahead of the men, and to have their backing is so critical. So that's when you get your tablecloth out, you spend some money on the food. Treat them. They're your elders. Love them. Show them they're special and ask them to make it a high priority. Get them all along. Get them to read Trellis and Vine or The Mission of the Church or whatever. Or Ray Evans' book. What's that called? Ready, Steady, Grow. That's a good one. So Ready, Steady, Grow is a slightly more chaotic and therefore English, brilliant book on like purpose-driven church. So we got all our elders to read Ready, Steady, Grow. We had a discussion about it just a couple of months ago. So take them seriously. And write some notes for the elders. So I wrote an elder's manual, which is basic Acts 20. So I just basically for each one took a verse from Acts 20 and wrote my own little readings for it. Then we went through it as an eldership. And basically the back has got all the stuff I want to know about our church. That's where your vision statements are and everything else. You don't need mine. You write yours. So I want to say, stop copying everybody else and write your stuff, the stuff you want them to know about, what your plan is for Lingfield. So is this Lindfield or Lingfield? Lindfield. What is the plan to reach Lindfield for the gospel, and not just this town, but then the other towns around? You write that plan, what you're praying for Lindfield. So that's serving as overseers. Partnership. So Matt's developed an additional course. He's conscious that in my prepared to serve ministry, I'm not really training people how to do anything. I'm winning their hearts. I'm giving them a coherent doctrinal biblical viewpoint. They're one, you know, I go through women, what the women's ministry thing questions. I go through prophecy in Acts 2 and 1 Corinthians 14. This is where we deal with controversial stuff. We do question and answer sessions and we sort all that. So we're basically sorting out the mess, getting their doctrine coherent, winning them to me and to the cause of the church. And part of it is personal. I get to know them, and they get to know me. I want them to, because I want to be on mission with them. I want them on my team, and so I'm sharing my heart with them, things that hurt and things I'm thrilled with. That's why they want to make sacrifices, especially the pain. I'll say a bit more about that in a moment. So Matt is adding skills-based training, taking people away for weekends, of course, to a nice house. If you can get one, borrow somebody's house. Anyway, more of that. Thirdly, then, gospel ministry apprenticeships. I know you all believe in the value of apprenticeships. Have you noticed in 2 Timothy 3 how the Apostle Paul persuades Timothy to continue in ministry? We all do the last bit of chapter 3. Yes, the scripture is enormously important. That's the understatement of the century. Of course, the scriptures are what equip us for ministry. The Bible is the Swiss Army knife. It has everything you need. To thoroughly equip you for ministry. But he doesn't just say how wonderful the Bible is. He says, but you, however, know my way of life, my teaching, my purpose, how much I was persecuted, how much what happened in Lystra and Iconium and all that stuff. He keeps talking about how much he suffered. And in fact, he goes back to the sufferings before the sufferings on the mission trips. He goes back to when he was, when Timothy wasn't even part of his team. The things he would have seen in his hometown of Lystra. He remembers. Do you remember how I got beaten up in Lystra? What is he doing there? He's saying, do you remember how my ministry was authenticated by how much I suffered for Christ? And remember also those, your mother and your grandmother who taught you. And continue in the scriptures that are able to equip you for every good work. I think what I'm trying to say is, when you're sharing life with apprentices, let them know what hurts. Let them know what the cost is. They want to know. I could show you a film about the apprenticeships, but you know, sometimes people wonder, why are your leaders so loyal to you? The answer is because they've seen the pain. They've seen what it's like to be opposed. They've seen me criticized and actually taken to court, as some of you may know, just on an Anglican thing. They saw all that, and there's something about Christians that they will follow leaders with the integrity to suffer for the gospel. So those of you who need to contend for the gospel publicly, can I encourage you? Staying out of trouble is not a great way to win the loyalty of young leaders. What do young people want in their leadership above all? It's not power, it's integrity. They're looking for, you know, there's so much hypocrisy in all kinds of leadership at the moment, that if you will be godly and suffer for it, you'll be amazed how young leaders will follow you. I'm trying to say that to Willie Phillip up in Scotland. You know, he got thrown out of his church. And of course, he's grieving being thrown out of his church. I said, but do you understand this will establish your ministry amongst the young people of Scotland and Glasgow? They will follow you if you will stand up and take a beating for the gospel. Why does David Holloway have such a big church in Newcastle? Because he spent his whole life sticking his head above the parapet and getting punched. So what do young people think? I'll follow that man. Why do you think Philip Jensen has such a following? I know he's got a planet-sized brain. But he constantly got kicked for the gospel. So don't avoid getting kicked for the gospel. If you'll take a kick for the gospel, you'll find young leaders will say, I'll follow him. Yeah, we're always preaching from the pulpit. As we're preaching our way through the, you know, in your jobs, you know, you should stand up for Christ and suffer. If you're a teacher, you know, you may have to pray, you may lose your jobs. But how about some clergy losing their jobs then? You know, we're constantly telling the teachers and the nurses and the health professions that they have to get kicked for the gospel. Well, how about us? When was the last time you wrote a provocative article in the newspaper, for Christ's sake? Now, probably I'm standing in front of people who've bled and written, so that's only fine. But I'm just saying it's interesting how Paul uses and is not ashamed of his sufferings for the gospel in recruiting young leaders. And therefore, to share the hardships of your life. Why is it so hard? You know, if you're facing opposition in the church, if there's intransigence in some of the people there who won't let you make changes, you know, pray with your young leader about that. And you'll find he'll come back to you from Bible college. I know that means being vulnerable. But that's what guys want to know. They want to know, how is ministry sustainable? How can you keep doing this? Anyway, I don't be miserable, because in 1 Peter 5 he says, not because you have to, because you want to. I can't remember what the right words are now. Basically, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. So be cheerful, but be honest about the suffering. In terms of what we do with the gospel apprenticeships, I'm sure you've got all that sorted out. We do a head, heart and hands, or knowledge, character and skills. So in our Wednesday morning workshops, of course, we have Bible handling skills, we have doctrine knowledge, and we have ministry discussions, and we have exposition, model expositions and so on from senior pastors. Heart coaching ranging from formal curriculum-based training to informal issue-based mentoring. The distinctive thing we think we need to provide in our apprenticeships is a personal relationship with an experienced pastor. Classroom is not enough. And people will vote with their feet on who they want to work with. Hands, skills in gospel ministry. We want to persuade our guys with the Bible and some of God's people they can plant and grow a church. Some of our apprentices have planted churches. Obviously, they tend to be a little older, so in their late 20s. And they're able and godly. But we've planted a few churches with apprentices. We want to put blue sky over their heads and safety net under their feet. We want to give them a go. We want them to face problems. We want them to have a crack at ministry. So we don't want them just sitting in a classroom the whole time. One of the points of apprenticeship training is so people can experience what it's like, and we can give them a steer watching them in practice. What you don't want is somebody sitting in a classroom, then going to college for 3 years, then signing up for apprenticeship, and 7 years later working out they're in the wrong kind of ministry. And perhaps some of us here have had that experience. Only somebody has told us much earlier, do you know what, you'd be much better in cross-cultural ministry. I remember a chap called Graham, and maybe you know who this is. He was helping with the lunchtime ministry in Westminster when we were trying to reach government people. And he looks a little bit like Harry Potter in the film, little round glasses. And I was trying to get him to be more confident in presentation because he was a bit sort of stumbling in his words. Meanwhile, he was developing something with the Koreans in South London, and he set up something called the Visa Course. And so he had some Koreans coming along to his church. Anyway, he was preaching in the city, and it was all a bit sort of... wasn't very confident. Anyway, the Visa Course was growing. He now had 40 Koreans gathering in his house. So I was saying, look, you know, I actually remember, to my embarrassment, trying to give him speech lessons. You know, hold your diaphragm in. You know, project your voice a little bit more. You need some more authority if you're going to work with city people. Meanwhile, he now had 70 Koreans in the Visa Course. And suddenly it dawned on me, you moron, why are you trying to turn an obvious cross-cultural missionary into a city worker? And so he did corn Hill for a year, and then headed off to China, to Beijing, where he was for 12 years. He's come back. He's now the director of our London City Mission, Graham Miller. And there I was, trying to turn him into a gospel worker. Now, imagine if he'd gone to Bible college, spent 3 years learning how to be a city pastor, and then had a curacy where he was bombing out because he wasn't confident enough, he wasn't projecting his voice. Well, Beijing would have suffered, and London, you know, we wouldn't have London. You get my point. Yeah, people need a guide early on in life. And people are different. So, you know, others of our guys, you know, there was another guy, a brilliant guy called James. I've never met anybody stronger than James in character. He's a wonderful man. But he hated preparing talks, so he went sideways into publishing, and he's the good book company publishing guy, James Burstow. Anyway, lots of examples. So not everybody is the same. You need to allow for variety. And then what about staff training? Well, we have workshops for junior staff. We have regular all-staff training. What am I doing with my staff? They generally want to stay, and I've learned all sorts of things. Someone like Andrew Corns could tell you much more than I can about running happy staff teams and treating people well. One of the things I'm more and more convinced on is put everybody in a three-year contract and give them a formal review. I made the mistakes early on of flattering everybody so much, thinking I was loving them, raising expectations, making promises, and then you've got the problem of sorting things out when you really wish they'd move on. Or you think there's time for, you know. So contracts, reviews, a little bit of formality, handbook, and don't be tempted to flatter people, but give plenty of feedback and love them. Love your staff. The old public school leadership thing was basically about persecuting the fag. Has got to go from ministry. It's just not Christ-like. Of course, loving does mean having a hard conversation sometimes. And so feedback. But above all, love them. And you'll find they'll work well for you. Right, I think that's enough for me. I don't know whether that's got anything about leadership training. Why don't you ask questions? How do we do this? And it may be that you've got questions. Is the best thing, do you want to turn to the person next to you and spend 30 seconds just discussing what would be a good question? Because then you might not ask a question. Why don't you spend 1 minute, actually, turn to the person next to you, try and work out what would be a good question to ask, either about the previous session or this one. Okay, go. You've got a minute.